My name is Alicia Santo. I'm a reporter here at the Marshall Project. We're a criminal justice outlet focused exclusively on the criminal justice system. We're located in New York City, but we report on criminal justice nationwide.
So, Alicia, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Sure.
So you wrote an article recently, or it was part of a larger investigation, it sounds like, about the way conservative lawmakers across in state houses across the country are working towards reforming public defense systems in as they are in different states. Can you tell me, how did you first get involved with this story?
Well, I was actually talking to an advocate named David Carroll. He's the director of the Sixth Amendment Center, which is an organization that seeks to improve public defender systems. And I was actually talking to him for a totally different story, a story I didn't actually end up doing. But as we were kind of ending our conversation, I asked him something I usually ask people I'm talking to before we hang up, which is just, you know, so what else is going on? And he told me that he had noticed an interesting trend that seemed counterintuitive, which was that conservatives had been leading the movements on public defense reform in the states that had been passing it in basically the past decade. So he had been working in Idaho and Michigan and Utah, and these were the places where there had been large bills that had passed the legislature that basically overhauled the systems in those states. And so that was really intriguing to me. I think a lot of people assume indigent defense is a progressive cause, but it turned out that there was many conservatives who felt quite passionately about indigent defense, and in contrast with a lot of blue states, were actually making it a priority and passing legislation.
Tell our listeners a little bit about who David Carroll is, and I guess more to the point, what the Sixth Amendment Center is doing around this issue?
Sure. So David Carroll is a longtime researcher and advocate on the Sixth Amendment. He previously worked for a different advocacy organization for a decade, and basically the work he did then and that he still does now is he goes to a state, often by their invitation, and he reviews their court system and how and whether it's meeting the Sixth Amendment and in what ways it's failing. And he documents that in a very specific detail. So kind of the pattern that emerged in my reporting was that there was often a report written first or sometime in the process that really laid out all of the different failures. And David Carroll was often the author of that report. From there, he left the previous organization and started the Sixth Amendment Center because he wanted to he was previously working for a law, like an organization, a membership organization for lawyers. And he's not a lawyer, but he also wanted basically like politicians and lawmakers and everybody, experts in policy in the state, to feel that he was kind of with them. He was their partner in progress and not an adversarial entity that was pushing them, but from a standpoint like the ACLU, which does very important work by suing the states, but it's very much an adversarial position that they occupy. So he often does these reports, and then he works with these state lawmakers. And one of the things that's very interesting about him, in my opinion, was that he wanted people to come to the reason they cared about public defenders for their own, in their own worldview, their own political view. And so he noticed, though, that with many conservatives, this idea of limited government, of casting public defenders as sort of the people who are protecting individuals and protecting individual rights from a government that's gone out of control, was very compelling to a lot of conservatives. And that was something he learned over time, working in many different states with liberal states, conservative states, all of them, and noticing that had been a very effective argument with conservatives. So in that way, I mean, that's one of the really important parts of the story, was just kind of his coming to realize that. Because when you know, there is this assumption that, you know, you're not going to get criminal justice reform done in a red state. It's the blue states where you're going to need to go. They're the ones where the lawmakers are going to be willing to listen and willing to work on it. And he found the opposite in his experience. And so, that's one of the stories that is told in this article.
They use this term, the tyranny prism, just sort of a way of looking at these issues that the left tends to approach from a more of a social justice angle, or a race and racism in the context of criminal defense, especially. But can you explain that term a little bit? What is the tyranny prism?
Yeah, so that's actually David Carroll's term, but we use it throughout because it was a really good way of encapsulating this idea, which is that, and Christy Perry is someone that felt strongly about this, which is that providing criminal defendants with a lawyer with adequate defense is just another way of keeping big government in check. So a lot of conservatives viewed this as when you're arrested and you're starting to go through the court system, there is a huge government there, prosecutors that have the full resources of the government against you. And if you don't have an adequate defense, then you don't, in many cases, stand a chance. And so they were framing this as actually, rather than growing government, which some people might assume, oh, you're going to make a public defender office, you're going to fund a public defender office statewide, that's growing government. And they actually framed it as, no, this is about limited government because this is about protecting individual citizens from a tyrannical government. Which is in many ways reflects what the founders of this country were worried about, which was a government that was going to, you know, just run rampant over people, over individuals. And this was meant to be a protection against that. And conservatives, you know, many times say they're very much adherent to the Constitution and believe in limited government. And so it's sort of flipping the framing a bit and making that same argument for public defense. Using those same principles.
And I realize it's very different from state to state, and that's one of the characteristics of the public defender system is that it's very different from state to state and even county to county within those states. But do you notice any patterns? Are these conservative lawmakers, are they trying to change things generally at the state level or try to make it more of a county level system?
Well, so when the Supreme Court in 1963 decided in the case Gideon versus Wainwright that all people that were basically then what it was charged as a felony and it was later widened to include anyone facing possible detainment, be provided a lawyer, they never gave instructions to the states or the local governments as to how that needed to be done, just that it was a requirement. So many states following that decision and through the decades that followed set up the public defender systems were completely local. So they were run by county governments, which meant that, you know, you could have a completely different defense just based on being, you know, a few miles away. So it really depended on geography. And most of the overhauls in recent years have been creating either a statewide system completely, or in the case of these conservative states, they weren't comfortable with a statewide system. It's still county run, but it has state oversight. It has state funding. There are standards that have to be met by the localities that are then, you know, that they're checked in on to make sure that they're actually following them. For many years, local governments have called this an unfunded mandate because it was just an expectation they had to provide this. And a lot of conservatives still really embrace local control in their state. They don't necessarily want it to be state-run, but they want the state to have some oversight and guidance to tell the states and training and money to tell these localities, look, like this is how it has to be done in order for us to be meeting the requirements of the Constitution. So in the conservative states I looked at, it remained county-run, but it had this umbrella over it of the state, which before there was nothing. There was no public defender office. And when you don't have a state public defender office, you also don't have an advocate for public defenders in the state budgeting process. So now when you have an actual agency whose sole purpose is to ensure adequate defense and ensure the Sixth Amendment is met, now you actually have an advocate in the budgetary process saying, no, we need this money for these public defenders. And so I think the hope is that by having this, because by no means is the problem fixed, even though this legislation has been passed in these states. But I think the hope is that by having an advocate, by having money that's now being appropriated for these services, it's going to improve.
Yeah, and you mentioned a few states like Washington, California. I would throw in Illinois, where I'm from, where there's a blue-dominated but very consistently not able to reform public defense. And you talk about it a little bit in the article, but what do you think is going on there? What's succeeding in red states that isn't succeeding in blue states?
I think liberal policymakers are more worried about looking soft on crime. There's already an assumption that they are soft on crime. And I think that there's just more of an apprehension to take on a policy that could be recast in a light that makes them look like they're trying to give criminals some sort of perk. And I think that in the examples that I researched, the conservatives weren't concerned about being portrayed in that way. They weren't concerned that when they ran for re-election, some sort of ad was going to run about how they, pushed through laws that protected criminals, because they just don't necessarily have that concern already kind of within their political philosophy. Like, I think that that has a lot to do with it. For example, in Michigan, the first time the bill was introduced, it was a Democratic controlled House, I believe, at that time. And it didn't even go to a vote. When it switched over to being all conservative, both in the governorship, but also you have the House and the Senate, that's when it eventually passed under that leadership. So I find that to be interesting. And the reason we have California and Washington in the article is because both of those states are currently being sued by the ACLU. Because there's a lot of people that aren't getting their constitutional rights are not being met. And you think in those states, or even in your state, your home state of Illinois, that this would be solved already there. That would be the assumption I think some people might have. But it's not true. And it's not even on the table. It's not even being talked about. So I think that's surprising to a lot of people.
What do you think is necessary for blue states to move forward with this sort of reform?
I'm not really sure what it would take in a blue state. Like, when I was doing the research for this, there just hadn't been a blue state that had done a big overhaul in a really long time. You had New York State, where I'm from. Yes, there was money that has been appropriated this year to improve public defenders in New York, but that they've been sued by the ACLU since 2007 to do that. So that was 10 years later, and it wasn't exactly voluntary. So I don't know what it will take. I am interested to see if it comes to a legislative session where they make indigent defense their priority. Now, that's not to say that in blue states, criminal justice reforms generally haven't been put up for a vote. They have. It's just that indigent defense, for whatever reason, hasn't. And I don't know why that is, So it'll be interesting to see in the coming years what sort of political philosophy will lie at the heart of a liberal push and whether a liberal push will happen.
Alicia Santo with the Marshall Project, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
For KBOO Evening News in Portland, I'm Sam Bowman.